Dr. Shabir, welcome to Let the Quran Speak.
Pleasure to be on.
Now, we are continuing our series on abrogation, and now we want to look at what modern academics have said about this theory of abrogation. And Dr. Shabir, I imagine this isn't really a new concept for them, because I imagine that other literature have also gone through this process of abrogation.
Yes. You have, for example, the Christian idea that the New Testament abrogates the Old Testament, that you know, God gave a new covenant,
right?
in a new dispensation, mm-hmm, through Jesus. And book of Hebrews in the Christian New Testament specifically says in chapters 8 and 10 that there have been previous revelations, apparently referring to the Old Testament, which was for a previous time, and now we have a new dispensation. More generally, among Muslims, there is also the idea that the Quran abrogates the previous scriptures. So let's say God gave a specific commandment to Moses when people were traveling in the desert about how to build a tabernacle in the desert. So obviously that pertains to that situation. When you come to the city, you're going to build a temple. It's not going to follow the same prescriptions as the tabernacle in the desert, because to build tabernacle in the desert has to do with, you know, tent pegs and all of that. But the city life has its own needs, and you're going to build a temple according to different rules. So rules may be given for a specific time, for a specific place, for a specific concern or circumstance, and later on that law could be repealed. Mm-hmm. So this is generally understood.
Mm-hmm. So what modern scholars do you have in mind in terms of how they have critiqued the theory of abrogation?
There are several scholars. And nowadays, of course, the religion of Islam is being studied in universities throughout the Western world, and it is a topic of study like any other subject matter. And academics have come a long way. They used to, at one time, be heavily influenced by Christian theologies and approaches, but now it is mostly secular, and examine the religion of Islam as they might examine any other religion. So a variety of approaches have been taken with regards to the theory of abrogation among these scholars. For example, Richard Bell and his student William Montgomery Watt, in their book Introduction to the Quran, they take the view that when the Muslim scholars are talking about the possibility of abrogation, meaning that some verses of the Quran were once recited but are no longer in the Quran itself, they attribute this to a normal happenstance that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, may have been preaching. People have a vague memory that certain verses were with them, but they don't see it in the Quran now, but that's okay with them, and it's part of the process. Mm. But at the same time, as William Montgomery Watt points out in that book, nothing that was to be included in the Quran could have been left out, because it was a public process, and it's inconceivable that there is something that deserved inclusion and the Muslims missed it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, nothing could have been put into the Quran that did not deserve to be there, because again, the public process would not allow for that, because Muslims would protest if somebody tried to include something that was not genuinely part of the Quran. But at the same time, he holds to the possibility that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, revised the Quran over time. So he preached the Quran. Some of the contents were in later revisions not included. He accepts that in principle, which is one of the aspects of the Muslim theory of abrogation, that some verses may have been revealed but not included in the text of the Quran as we have it now. Mm-hmm. But that's one approach.
Mm-hmm. Have any of the scholars spoken about the fact that this theory of abrogation is discussed in such a widespread manner? So many scholars are talking about abrogation and we're discussing which verses might have abrogated others. Have any scholars talked about maybe there are political reasons or religious reasons?
Yes. One such scholar is Wa'il Hallaq. His name sounds like an Arab name, and it is, but he was not a Muslim. He was a professor at McGill University. He wrote many books, including The Origins of Islamic Law. And in that book, he speaks of abrogation as a distinct topic, and he says that it seems that Muslims, and Muslim scholars more specifically, We're looking at their situation on the ground. They have certain practices which have become common among Muslims, and now they're comparing those practices with the Quran. Mm. And they're finding that some of their practices do not match what is in the Quran. So the explanation that arose among Muslims was that, you know, maybe there was a verse of the Quran that was once revealed to the Prophet, peace be upon him, that would justify these practices among Muslims, because otherwise it would mean that Muslims are not following the Quran. Mm. So the Muslim response is that, yeah, we are following the Quran, just not the Quran that's in the hands of the Muslims today. We are following conceptually Quranic verses which were revealed, but not included. He also points out that sometimes contradictions were noticed between verses of the Quran, or at least what people would perceive to be contradictions at first sight, without, mm-hmm. you know, gaining a deeper insight into the study of the text. And the simple response from the Muslims at that time was that, okay, well, one verse trumps the other one, so we have here what they call the theory of abrogation. So this was taken further. A scholar who became widely known in this field of the study of abrogation is John Burton. He wrote an entire book just on this topic, Islamic Theories of Abrogation. And in this book, he goes into greater detail. He traces the development of the theory. He studies al-Imam al-Shafi'i's Risala, I should say who Imam al-Shafi'i is, right? Imam al-Shafi'i was a great scholar from the second century of Islam. He was born around the year 150 of the Hijra, which means 120 years approximately after the death of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And he comes now to be known to us as one of the eponyms of the four major schools of Islamic jurisprudence. He actually worked out a legal theory, at least he left us a piece of writing that works out the theory, like what is called legal theory. For the average Muslim, you know, we just need to know what are we supposed to do. But for the Muslim scholar who is working this out theoretically, there has to be like a theory, like how do we get to that final answer. Mm-hmm. So the Muslim scholar will say we have to get it from the Quran. If it's not in the Quran, we get it from the statements of the Prophet, peace be upon him. If it's not in the statements of the Prophet, then it must be something that the Muslim scholars have agreed on, which is called ijma. And if it's not by ijma, then at least it may be the qiyas of one scholar. It's kind of an analogy. Something is clearly stated. We're going to, by analogy, take what is stated about one situation and apply it to another situation which is analogous to the previous one. So this is called legal theory. How do we get from A to mm-hmm. B, from the Quranic verses to the application on the ground? So Imam al-Shafi'i worked this out, according to his own theorizing, in a book called Ar-Risala. And John Burton studies this in great detail and other writings of Imam al-Shafi'i and other early scholars as well to see what Muslim scholars were theorizing about and what led to this idea of abrogation. So for Imam al-Shafi'i and some others at the time, again, like Wael Hallaq said, they have to show the compatibility between what is being practiced by Muslims and what is mentioned in the Quran. Mm-hmm. And if it's not there in the Quran, there is the conception that it must have been in a verse of the Quran elsewhere, but it's not in the Quran as we have it now. For Imam al-Shafi'i as well, we could not have that a practice of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is different from the Quran. Because this would lead to the idea that the Prophet Muhammad is not himself following the Quran. So the Quran dictates for Muslims what we're supposed to do. But the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is the first Muslim. Mm-hmm. So he has to do what the Quran says. And if the reports in Hadith show that he was doing something else, then for Imam al-Shafi'i, the answer must be that there must have been another verse of the Quran that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, himself is following. And so with such theorizing, the Muslim scholars arrived at the idea that, you know, some verses were not included in the Quran, but they're nonetheless Quranic. And also that there are verses in the Quran which no longer apply because Muslims were not applying it. Mm-hmm. And their explanation for that is that, oh, it's been abrogated because we're following the one which has not been abrogated and so on. rather than piecing together all of the verses on a topic and coming out with a distilled answer that really is the flavor of all of these verses put together.
All right. Thank you for that, Dr. Jabir. I think next time we'll look at what Muslim scholars have said about abrogation, modern Muslim scholars.
Sure. I look forward to that.
If you enjoyed this video, click like and subscribe. And please donate to support our work at QuranSpeaks.com.